Hello everyone, and welcome to our January e-learning. So today's topic, we're going to talk about performance management, benefits, trends, and legal considerations. So as usual, before we get started, just a few reminders. First, of course, if you have any questions during the presentation, please feel free to use the chat box at the bottom right hand of your screen. Type your questions there. As always, we'll do our best to answer them during the presentation, but of course, if we don't get a chance to answer them in the moment, someone from E2R will reach out to you afterwards to schedule a call to speak with one of the advisors. Of course, in case you've missed any of our past webinars, you weren't able to attend live, you can always find the recordings on our website at e2rsolutions.com, and the corresponding PowerPoint presentation can be found on your member portal. If you need any assistance with that, also don't hesitate to get in touch. Finally, we, of course, take this opportunity to remind you that the information contained within the webinars is an overview only and is not intended as an analysis of all areas of employment and labor law. Accordingly, it should not be relied upon as legal advice for any given situation. As always, if you have any specific questions related to the information we present today, don't hesitate to contact us. It can be on this topic or any other topic and specific applicability to your workplace. Just for you to mark on your calendars in February, our next e-learning will take place on February 23rd. Okay, now without further ado, let's get started on today's e-learning. Okay, so why don't we go through the agenda first? First, of course, as always, we do a little bit of an introduction. We'll then go through the importance and benefits of performance management. So, you know, why do it? What are all the good things that come out of doing performance management? We'll go over the legal considerations. You know us, there's always the legal component. We'll talk about eliminating evaluator error and bias that exists when conducting and completing performance appraisals. We'll talk about the difference between performance management and performance appraisal. And we'll talk about a few things you should consider before you get started on performance management. We'll go through some of the trends that are going on currently with respect to performance management. And then we'll go through the common components of, let's call it, the more traditional performance appraisals. We'll go through best practices and then end with a bit of a conclusion. Okay, so let's get started with the introduction. And we've got here up for you a couple of I think really interesting statistics. The first is from the Corporate Leadership Council, and essentially what they found in a study was more than half of the most important drivers of employee engagement are related to effective performance management skills. So that includes setting clear goals, providing regular feedback, and supporting employee development. So more than half of the most important drivers of engagement for employees. I think the second statistic is a little, you know, even more impactful, and this is what the SHRM Foundation found. SHRM is the Society for Human Resource Management out of the U.S. And what they found in a study is that solid leadership, for example, managers who are effective at employee performance management, produce better business results. And what do we mean by better business results? What they found was is it resulted in 50% less staff turnover, 10 to 30% higher customer satisfaction ratings, 40% higher employee commitment ratings, and 200% higher net profits. So I don't know, if that statistic isn't reason enough to do performance management and have solid leaders, I'm not sure what is. Okay, but we will spend a little bit more time on a few more benefits of performance management and why it's important to make this part of your HR function. So of course, first and foremost, you know, it enables management to identify, evaluate, and assist in developing an employee's performance, right? It gives your employees the opportunity to discuss performance and the performance standards regularly with their manager. It gives them that sort of that forum to do that. On the flip side, it gives the managers a means of identifying the strengths and weaknesses of their employees. And it provides the format that enables the managers to recommend specific programs where there may be performance deficiencies, right? So it gives us a format to do that. And the last point, you know, if the performance review is linked to the company objectives, well, then the company is going to meet its goals and objectives as well. If the employees are performing, then the company is performing as well. One of the benefits of conducting performance management is that it provides an objective measuring tool, right? If we do it properly, of course, it provides an objective tool that we can use to identify which employees are best suited for promotions or staff changes, right? And again, objective, because these types of employment decisions, and we'll get to this a little later on, should be made using objective information. Of course, helps identify training needs at all levels within the organization, and helps identify which employees might be have the potential for advancement. So, you know, maybe we're grooming an employee to move into a particular role, or maybe an employee who's simply just better suited to another area of the company. All of those things can come out when we conduct performance management. And a few more. Again, this goes back to that stat in the first slide, 50% less turnover. Performance management, it can be used to attract, retain, develop, ensure employee satisfaction. We can use it to build future business capabilities. Interestingly, you know, and I'm going to jump to that last point because I think it's important to know, we get a lot of clients who ask, there is no legal requirement in Canada to adopt a performance management system. Obviously, a lot of employers do because of all of these benefits that we talked about, but there's no legal requirement to do it. But if you do it, we need to make sure that you're following the law. And when we say the law, we'll talk about that in the next few slides when we talk about legal consideration. But generally speaking, if you choose not to do performance management whatsoever, there's no legal obligation to do so.
So we've talked about all of the benefits of performance management, and yet it's still something we all dread. So for managers in particular, probably other than terminating somebody, it's probably the most disliked managerial activity. So why is that? Probably at a very basic level, managers don't like to sit in judgment. It's hard and uncomfortable to sit and judge someone. They don't want to risk offending anyone, because is there really such thing as constructive criticism? There's always that risk that you're going to hurt someone's feelings, or they're not going to take that criticism well. There's also the feeling that the employee performance is a manager's responsibility. So it becomes personal a little bit. The manager's success is linked to their employee's success. There's that concern for crossing any legal lines. Time consuming. Obviously, the number of hours can be quite large. So if you have a manager who has a large team, so maybe a team of 10, they have annual reviews, that's a minimum of 10 hours that they're investing into this, plus any sort of prep time. And that time, generally, we feel like it could be better spent doing quote-unquote real work. Managers dislike confrontation of any kind. That's probably true for all people. But basically, managers don't want to do it wrong. So all of this can be addressed in training. And that's something important that we want you to get out of this, that proper training for managers on how to do this process and how to, so that they understand the benefits of the process. Hopefully that can take away some of the feelings of dread that they feel going into it.
Christy and I were talking earlier prior to getting on this webinar, and I don't think either of us have ever met a manager who says, oh, performance reviews are my favorite part of being a manager. It's typically not the case.
And employees don't like it either. So why do employees dread it? Quite simply, nobody likes feeling judged. There's often some it's unclear as to what the standards are, so you're not really sure what you're being judged on. If your performance happens to have been shaky that particular year, it's obviously going to be a lot worse. Employees feel like victims of authority. So traditionally, we had that imbalance of power where a manager is talking at an employee and sort of listing all the things that they've done wrong. So it's not a discussion. You feel like it's a one-way conversation. Employees often feel the need to be prepared and defend themselves. So they go in and they're sort of on the offensive. They might feel threatened or shut down, so it's not really a useful exercise when those feelings are there. It can be one of the most emotionally charged procedures an employee will go through in their professional lives. You sit there thinking, what's going to come out? What have I done this year? What have I forgotten that I've done this year from 6 months ago? So ideally, this meeting is going to be a summary of the year, And if a manager has been doing ongoing coaching through the year, there shouldn't be any surprises for the employee.
And we'll get into that a little bit on the next slides with respect to sort of, again, the difference between performance management and the performance appraisal. Okay, so let's talk about the legal considerations. And what we're really talking about here, what does come into play, is human rights. So I'm sure, as all of you know, across the country, there's both federal and provincial human rights legislation that protects employees from discrimination in the workplace. And companies can be the target of a human rights complaint where an employee feels like they've been discriminated against. And that discrimination doesn't necessarily need to be intentional. Oftentimes this is called systemic discrimination. So discrimination happens as a result of employment practices that unintentionally have discriminatory impact. So we do sort of carefully need to look at, you know, some practices that maybe we've implemented that unintentionally have a discriminatory impact. So, I mean, generally speaking, and the takeaway from this is that employment decisions should always be based on the employee's ability to do the job, right? So it should not be based on factors that are unrelated to performance. So when we're making employment decisions, we should use objective information based on their performance and their job only. You know, remove that subjectivity as much as possible. Essentially, remove the person from the performance, right? Try to distinguish between the two. Finally, in the actual performance evaluation process, the meeting, et cetera, you know, the manager should be cognizant of the fact that certain things should not be raised. Again, we're focusing on the employee's ability to do the job and their performance. So things like physical characteristics, weight, skin color, birthplace, gender, pregnancy, or, you know, the fact that maybe someone has future plans to start a family, disability, medical conditions, family status, age, none of those things should find their way into the performance evaluation process. That's when we start to get offside with human rights legislation. And again, how can this be avoided? Train your managers.
So often throughout the process, there's going to be evaluator error or bias that comes out, and training is part of that, and awareness is part of that as well, because sometimes it's completely unintentional. So it helps to be aware of some of these biases so that you can eliminate them. Some types of errors are distributional in nature, so meaning they involve a group of ratings given to a number of employees. So we have a couple examples here. So error of central tendency. Basically, you have a manager who is saying all of their employees are right down the middle. Obviously, that's not going to be a reflection of the reality, but a manager might say that all of their employees are about average, and super common when we have evaluators who are reluctant to either assign something extremely high or extremely low ratings. They don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, for example.
Yeah, I think that goes back to that idea of avoiding the sort of the dread of it, in that I don't want to have to engage in confrontation, difficult conversations, so I'm just going to evaluate everyone sort of right down the middle.
The flip side to that, of course, is going to be either your leniency or strictness error. So your tendency to give employees either unusually high or unusually low ratings. What you want to eliminate is an employee who has a manager who's maybe going to be unfair to them in one direction or another. Then we have broad brush or generalization errors. So a manager who might have a tendency to give the employees the same rating in each category and generalize all of their feedback. So that might happen if they don't think they have time to go through it more thoroughly, but the feedback's not specific and ultimately not helpful to an employee's development. Some ratings are going to be temporal, which occurs when the performance evaluation is biased depending on how performance information is selected, evaluated, and organized by the evaluator over time. So a couple examples are the recency error, so or the gambler's fallacy. So you're assuming that the most recent behavior is what's going to continue, or the evaluation is based largely on whatever that person did most recently as opposed to throughout the entire performance evaluation period. So you're looking at something terrible they did last week versus, you know, a year of strong performance. We also have contrast error. So that's when the evaluation is biased either upwards or downwards based on a comparison with another employee that they just evaluated. So again, that's taking away from the individual employee and the actual job that they're in. And finally, we have the similar to me error, probably fairly common and not intentional, natural to some degree. Basically, the manager might inflate a rating because of a mutual personal connection that they have with the employee. So again, training for the managers, teaching them to separate the person from the performance should help to eliminate some of these issues.
Yeah, absolutely, because I mean, I think they're all pretty much human error. We probably don't even realize we're doing it. So training the managers is key to just bring them to the forefront to let them know, hey, keep an eye on these. Okay, so we'll talk about performance management versus performance appraisal, because oftentimes these two terms get used synonymously, but they're actually quite different. So let's just sort of spend the next couple of slides talking about the difference between the two. So we'll just start with a couple definitions. So the performance management essentially is the process of identifying, measuring, managing, and developing the performance of human resources in an organization. So we're talking about, you know, all of the human resources within an organization, whereas performance appraisal is the ongoing process of evaluating employee performance. Performance management essentially is about what you're going to do to help an employee continue in their development. Performance management is, you know, again, managing their performance. How can they become increasingly better at what they do for the organization? Performance appraisal, on the flip side, is how progress is evaluated, or how you evaluate progress being made by assessing an employee's actual performance over a period of time, right? So we're looking at their performance over the last 12 months review period, whereas performance management, again, is what we're going to be doing to help an employee continually increase and become better in terms of their performance. I think one of the key differences is that the performance appraisal tends to look at the past, right? So again, that performance appraisal that looks at the last 12 months of your performance. So we're evaluating them on past performance and past behavior, whereas performance management is focused on the present and the future. In the present, performance management looks like ongoing coaching and feedback, which is what we'll talk about next. And then, of course, future is, okay, where do we need to see you with respect to your performance? So performance appraisal is sort of a reflection of the past. Performance management is dealt with in the present and also looking towards the future. So performance appraisals tend to be more reactive, right? We're reacting to past performance, whereas performance management is proactive. We see something that needs to be addressed, we address it. Or we're looking towards the future to say, okay, you know, in 6 months we're looking to see you go here with respect to your performance, and we're proactively addressing that. So, I mean, they're quite different in terms of what they mean from an HR perspective, but they do go hand in hand, right? Performance management is ongoing, every day, coaching, feedback, in real time, in the present, and also looking towards the future, whereas the performance appraisal really is looking at the past, going back and evaluating performance. So even though they are quite different, and we use those terms differently, they do go hand in hand. Okay, so let's talk about ongoing coaching and feedback. And this is essentially what performance management looks like in real time. And like Christy was saying previously, ideally, if we're doing it right, nothing in a performance appraisal meeting should come as a shock to the employee. Really, what the performance appraisal meeting should be is a summary of all of the things that we've discussed with respect to that employee's performance over the last, let's say, 12 months. The reason why it shouldn't come as a shock is because the manager has been engaging in ongoing performance feedback and coaching throughout the year. So when issues arise, they're addressed in a timely fashion at that time. So again, the performance appraisal meeting just ends up being a summary of the review period. There is a difference between feedback and coaching, of course. So feedback essentially is giving praise, recognizing the work an employee is doing, affirming good efforts, positive results, or offering advice or help when necessary. You know, feedback is of course key in a manager's role. You know, when you're giving timely feedback as well. You know, an error occurs, or you know, performance isn't quite where we are, where we want it to be in terms of meeting expectations. We deal with it at the time. We address that deficiency so that it doesn't fester and it doesn't lead to perhaps inevitably worst case scenario termination, right? Ideally, we're giving that feedback in an attempt to correct the behavior so that it doesn't lead to, you know, having to end the employment relationship, which of course comes with all of sort of additional costs associated with that. The difference between feedback and coaching is that coaching essentially is providing your employees with knowledge, tools, and opportunities they need to develop themselves and become more effective. So coaches, essentially, we're not developing people, but we're giving them the tools that they need to equip themselves to develop themselves. So ideally, what ongoing coaching and feedback looks like is managers and their employees having regular one-on-one coaching sessions. Right now, again, managers, you know, communicate to managers. This can be, you know, a quick 5-minute meeting every week, a check-in with your employee to ensure that they're on track with respect to their performance. So coaching and feedback is inevitably a key part of the manager's role. From an employee perspective, it gives them a forum to bring up any issues or problems, right? They don't feel like they need to wait and build everything up to the annual performance meeting, which again sort of leads to those feelings of dread. And it makes it easier for managers to have difficult conversations about performance with an employee, because rather than leaving it all till, you know, that performance appraisal meeting, having it ongoing, those meetings are less emotionally charged than leaving everything to the end of the year. And of course, coaching is always easier when we do it in a timely manner. So your managers see something going on with an employee's performance, not meeting expectations, errors being made, and it's dealt with right at that time. We give advice and guidance in terms of correcting.
We wanted to mention some of the trends that we're seeing in HR and the direction that performance appraisals and performance management are taking. You've probably seen some headlines with some fairly radical processes, but some companies are completely eliminating the traditional performance appraisals. So you can see there's some pretty big companies listed there, and they're doing away to various degrees with that formal one-way discussion, sort of traditional with the forms to complete and all of the tedious past-facing focus at some of those companies. So some of the changes that we're seeing in the industry fall into a few buckets. So generally, we're seeing a move away from rating systems. So we've shown some examples here on the slide of some of the rating systems that are typically seen, whether it's numbers or behavior listed. The problem with these is that they're not clear or meaningful. So every manager is going to define what acceptable is different from a different manager in the organization. What I say is above average might not be true for another manager. So ideally, when we use these scales, if we are going to use these scales, what we're seeing is that they're built out a lot more. So specific behaviors are assigned to each level, so you know exactly what that performance looks like. You can define what significantly above average behaviors will look like for each competency. And the idea is that, again, we should be training our managers on how to complete these ratings properly, these rating systems, if we're going to keep using them. And hopefully, by defining those behaviors, again, we're eliminating any biases that might exist and creating a more meaningful feedback for the employee. Other trends that we're seeing, generally, our performance management systems are more flexible. So just recognizing that priorities change. So sometimes a year is too long of a cycle. Business needs are going to shift and new projects might appear. So we're seeing that the goals and objectives listed on performance evaluations are often a lot more flexible and maybe not as well defined for that long period. They're also becoming more simplified, so short and sweet, which is obviously a lot easier if they're happening regularly. And leads well into another trend that we're seeing. These appraisals are often more timely and ongoing. So being that they're more frequent, they're going to be more relevant, and removes, again, that dread of what's going to come up. What have I forgotten about that I did this year? Lindsay touched on this a little bit as well. So we're seeing reviews are more change focused now. So focusing on your future versus your past behavior. And that center is obviously on employee development and what we can do for them going forward. Reviews are also going to be linked more now to the big picture. So company objectives, you'll often see goals cascaded from the top down. All of them are linked. So your director's goals are going to be similar to the manager's, similar to sort of your frontline employees, which helps ultimately create relationships. So you see, I guess, how teams work together to achieve the organizational objectives, and you know exactly how your role fits into that big picture.
Okay, so before you get started, what are some of the things that you should consider? First is job descriptions, right? So have you created job descriptions? If a portion of the performance appraisal is going to be to evaluate the employee on their performance in their, we'll call it, day-to-day tasks, then, you know, do employees actually have a good understanding of their role expectations? If we don't have a job description that has been published to employees, maybe we do that first. Does the company have any particular core values? Right? And are they well known to the employee population? So say that, you know, corporate leadership has set three core values, corporate core values. Well, if we really want those, again, talking about cascading and big picture, if we want those to filter right down to your frontline employees, perhaps, you know, we develop competencies tied to these core values and build them into the performance appraisal system. That way, again, it filters down. Employees now have a good understanding and are evaluated on the core values set by the leadership team. Same thing with corporate goal setting, right? So we want to make sure that if the corporation has set goals for the overall company, that they're linked to the individual employee goals. Everything should cascade down. And, you know, that way, too, like Christy was mentioning, the employee can see how they impact the bottom line. I think we've hit this one home a few times, but, you know, you really have to take a look at how skilled your managers are within the company. You know, how much experience do they have delivering performance management feedback appropriately? If we've come to the conclusion that, okay, we've got some fairly junior managers or, you know, employees who have been promoted to managers, then, you know, maybe our, you know, one of the first things that we do is do some real fulsome training for our management team. Just logistically speaking, you know, consider timing and frequency of the performance appraisal. So when are we going to do them? That's a big question because, you know, we're talking about how managers dread it. You know, the last thing we want to do is to make these right at sort of our, you know, busiest time of the year. Oftentimes what our, you know, employers will do is they'll try to see if there's a slow time, a downtime, maybe, you know, over the summer or in December, and they'll choose that time to say, okay, this is when we're going to, you know, organization-wide do performance appraisals. That way it may be, you know, a little easier on our managers as well. And then frequency. So, you know, are we going to do them once a year? Are we going to do them twice a year? Or, you know, even more frequently, if we're going to move to maybe a more flexible or ongoing approach, then maybe we're doing it once a month. And then finally, you know, one thing to consider is, does the company have a tuition reimbursement program or a specific budget dedicated to training and development activities? This really will link back if your performance appraisal has a section on personal development, so employee development. Say the employee sets a goal that they want to, you know, get their CPA or take an Excel course. You know, maybe we can, again, link that back to a tuition reimbursement program if it exists. And employees can apply that way.
Our next section is on some of the common components of a performance appraisal. So if you're going to create a program like this, here are some items that you should probably include. So first of all, the major contributions and accomplishments. You want to be listing out everything that the employee has accomplished or achieved during that performance review period. So whether it's projects that they've done, internal assignments, training courses, something new that they learned that year, a particular skill or competency, for example. Within the performance assessment itself, you want to list all of the major areas of responsibility during the review period. So that ties back to that job description. Employees should know what they're being evaluated on. So share that with them and make sure that you're listing their responsibilities from there. And then provide comments on both the strengths and required areas of improvement using those responsibilities.
Okay, so if there is a section on core competencies, then in this section you would list the core competencies associated with the position. Interestingly, with core competencies, I mean, you can do it one of two ways. There could be core competencies specifically associated with the position, or, you know, you could even do core competencies associated with the organization as a whole. So again, linked back to those core values. Every employee in the organization, regardless of their position, is evaluated on the same core competencies that trickle down from the leadership team and the core values. Now, just as the job description is important when we're talking about that job assessment section, what we like to often suggest to build with respect to the competency section is a competency framework. Again, this is to eliminate subjectivity, error, and what a competency framework essentially is it contains a definition, a very clear and detailed definition of the core competency required for success in each position. It may even have different levels. So, you know, for example, if the competency is initiative, then maybe that looks different depending on the position. So, you know, maybe there's a level 1 through 5 of the competency of initiative. So it's really sort of building a dictionary, a competency dictionary that managers can refer to when they're evaluating employees in this section. And again, just like the previous section, you know, provide examples on how the employee has previously performed with respect to the core competencies and how the manager expects that employee to achieve success in the future. Those examples, of course, are key in terms of providing feedback to the employees. So from there, a section on overall comments. This is essentially just a section where the manager will write comments regarding the employee's overall performance, so really a summary piece.
You may also want to consider including a personal development plan, so more of that forward-thinking development focus for employees. You want to create it ideally jointly between the manager and the employee. And so if it's something that a manager is doing unilaterally, you're going to have probably less buy-in from the employee and less motivation to maybe follow through on some of that plan. So hopefully if it's done jointly, the employee will take ownership of it. The objective should start with an action, describe the intended result, and then set a quantitative target with the time by which the results to be accomplished. So that's that SMART goal that you've probably seen a few times. So specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. Once you've developed this plan, the objectives might need to be modified throughout the year. So depending on what's happening, you might need to change them. Again, being agile is going to be important. And that can happen through your ongoing coaching meetings. This is going to be especially true in the case of a newly created position. Performance objectives should accurately reflect the company's values and should be aligned with departmental and organizational goals. So again, that big picture view and seeing the impact that your specific role has on the bottom line.
Okay, and oftentimes a final section would be a space for the employee to provide comments. Right, so you know the manager has completed 95% of this performance review. But there should be a section where the employee can provide their thoughts and comments. So encourage, the manager should be encouraging the employee, you know, once the meeting is over, to take a copy of the performance appraisal, take it away, take it home, you know, read it through. Oftentimes employees don't necessarily digest all of the information in that meeting, so it's important that they're given the opportunity to take it home, read it through on their own time, and then what they should be doing is encourage to fill out their comments and thoughts. And they should be able to do that on their own time. Depending on what is in those employee comments, it may necessitate a follow-up meeting, right? So, you know, depending on what the employee says, a follow-up meeting may need to be scheduled. But generally speaking, once the employee has completed that section with their thoughts, then they would return their form to the manager with their signature. But oftentimes, I mean, I think sometimes this box is there and employees just aren't sure what to fill out, but they should really be encouraged to provide some thoughtful feedback in writing regarding the appraisal, ideally.
So a few best practices in summary, and we've touched on a few of these items, obviously. Be sure to review the entire evaluation period when identifying employee accomplishments. So you want to eliminate that recency error and really make sure you're focusing on what they've done throughout that whole period. Be objective, so be fair and balanced in what their contribution has been throughout the year. And again, separate the person from the performance and separate any of those human rights issues that we've talked about as well. Use quantifiable, measurable data whenever possible. And make sure that you're objective again. So a pleasing personality is not enough. You really want to make sure that even though you like the person, if they weren't effective in their role and they didn't have a positive impact, you want to make sure that's reflected in the review.
Absolutely. So a few more best practices is, you know, just around preparing for the meeting. And this can, again, be all part of training for the managers. But essentially what you should do prior to the meeting is to gather all the relevant documentation collected throughout the year, right? So, and you're going to grab that from a variety of sources. So it doesn't necessarily just need the manager. They can speak to other managers maybe that the employee interacts with. They can speak to customers or clients. They can speak to other project team leads. So it can come from a variety of sources, not necessarily just the manager. But some other documentation that should be gathered is, you know, one, perhaps the employee's performance and development objectives from the previous year to see how they accomplished those objectives. Also, and, you know, most importantly, is the notes kept during the year. And this is something that, you know, I've done in training for managers previously where, you know, I mean, I don't know about anyone else, but my memory goes back about 24 hours, and that's about it. So to think to have to sort of remember the past 12 months is difficult, which is why that recency error often comes into play, where really whatever happened in the last, say, 3 months is what ends up impacting the performance appraisal. One way to avoid that is to encourage managers to keep a journal, keep a notebook in their desk that, you know, maybe at the end of the day for 2 minutes they jot down some notes about particular employee performance. That way they can take that journal when it's time to write the performance appraisals, and essentially all of their thoughts and notes over the entire 12-month period are in that journal. That way they don't have to rely on their memory. In terms of scheduling, you know, of course you don't want to schedule the meeting with the employee that day, right? Give them a little bit of advance notice, ideally 1 to 2 weeks. Obviously, it's just some sort of courtesy so that we're not springing this on the employee at the last minute, but also the employee should be preparing for the meeting as well, right? They should be giving consideration to their past performance appraisals, how they believe they performed during the review period, and then also prepare some goals and objectives. So, you know, start to think about what you want your personal development plan to look like for the next 12 months. So give them about 1 to 2 weeks.
So again, logistically, when you're doing the actual meeting, you want to choose a finite number of major points that you're going to focus on. You don't want to go on and list every single item that's happened. So choose sort of the highlights of the year if you can. And then assemble your specific examples to support those points. So use your notes, like Lindsay said, and avoid being vague. You want to communicate the consequences of those behaviors and of their performance. So again, linking it, whether it's to team objectives, company objectives, help communicate the consequences, whether it's positive or negative, of those behaviors. And make note of any ways that you think that the employee can improve performance. And that can be a discussion as well. It doesn't have to be a one-way manager to employee. It can certainly be a brainstorming session about what the employee can do to get better. You want to plan a positive ending, if you can, to this discussion. So again, with consensus on how to move forward, and express confidence in the employee's abilities to move forward in a positive way. At the end of the day, the manager needs to come prepared to this meeting with these examples and a plan for an action plan for moving forward.
Yeah. And I like the idea of ending on a sort of a positive note, right? So yes, you know, maybe there were some issues that have been addressed, but you know, overall we're excited to move forward with the employee. Okay, so going through again just some logistics around conducting the meeting. You know, you're setting a mutually convenient date and time. You know, we typically suggest, you know, slot 1 hour for these meetings. It may take a lot less, but, you know, it just gives everyone enough time to not feel rushed and to be able to have a fulsome discussion and a comprehensive meeting. And, of course, choose a private place, right? You don't want to be doing this in a cubicle in an open space. And then some discussion techniques, right? Because, you know, even if we've been, you know, doing really well on our ongoing feedback and coaching, this is still sort of the more formal meeting. And so when we're summarizing, perhaps maybe if performance has been overall deficient or not meeting expectations, it may still be a bit of a difficult meeting. So some techniques around having these discussions. You know, it's important to try to understand the employee's perspective, right? I think we've touched on this already, but, you know, obviously make sure the feedback is related to objective performance, substantiated by real-life examples. Never bring up perception or hearsay. Everything that we're talking about in these meetings should be rooted in real-life objectives and objective information. We talked about previously in terms of preparing for the meeting, gathering information from a variety of sources, right? So we're going to be talking to a whole bunch of different people about this employee who may give us great feedback about the employee or not so great feedback about the employee. Well, when it's, let's call it negative feedback, oftentimes employees are going to say, well, who said that about me? Well, certainly you never want to share the identity of the individuals, of your sources, to the employee. Now, it may happen that the employee inevitably still gets defensive or upset, depending on, again, they may not agree with what the manager is saying. You know, ideally we try to explore why the employee is feeling that way, and again, just try to provide more specific real-life examples as to, you know, why we have provided this particular feedback. And at the end of the day, the employee may not always agree with the manager's opinion, right? That happens sometimes. Certainly the manager can offer alternative ways of looking at the situation, but you know, you're never going to want to force your opinion on that employee. And I think again, all of this comes down to training your managers on how to have these discussions, particularly when the employee does perhaps get defensive or upset, how to deal with those particular situations. Okay, so we're on to our last slide. So just a conclusion, you know, three takeaways. You know, if you remember back to our stats from the first slide, implementing an effective performance management system will inevitably contribute to your overall success and profitability. Those statistics from the first slide were pretty stunning. So, you know, all the more reason why a performance management system is good to get into place. I feel like we've said this a million times, but the managers, particularly if they're not experienced in performance management, should be trained. Should be trained in, you know, the legal considerations, the evaluator errors, even just how to complete the documentation properly, how to have maybe the more difficult conversations, the logistics, et cetera. Training, training, training. It's going to set your managers up for success and have a more successful performance management process. And remember, going back to the difference between performance appraisals and performance management is not an annual occurrence, right? It's feedback, coaching on an ongoing basis that will inevitably lead to a smoother performance appraisal meeting. It won't be a shock to the employee, simply a summary of their past performance, and then we can move on to the future. So that wraps up our e-learning for this afternoon. Just as a reminder, in case you did want to find a copy of this presentation, copies of the presentation will be on the member portal later today. So if you'd like a copy, check, log into your member portal. If you have any difficulty accessing your portal, just reach out to us and we can help. So thank you very much for everyone's attendance this afternoon. Remember, mark your calendars February 23rd for our next e-learning. Thanks.